Welcome to Catholic Morality and the Catechism. Monsignor William Smith talks about things our society would sometimes rather not discuss. Moral conscience, virtues, and the Ten Commandments. Here is Monsignor Smith.
Hello, I'm Monsignor Smith. I'm a professor of moral theology at St. Joseph's Seminary, Dunwoody, which is the seminary for the Archdiocese of New York. In this series, we have been examining the moral teaching of the Catholic Church as that teaching is contained and presented in this Universal Catechism, the Catechism of the Catholic Church. In the first few segments, we examined some basic moral points that apply to everything because they are the foundation. And then we moved on to the specifics following the outline of the Catechism. And the specific part is outlined in the framework of the Ten Commandments. This time we move to Article 6 in that section, which concerns the sixth commandment, Thou shalt not commit adultery. The Catechism, as we read it here, follows very closely the methodology, or if you will, the path, the approach, the outlook of Pope John Paul II. Our Holy Father, before he teaches on any subject, he suggests and he leads the way himself by saying we should first go back and look for biblical foundations for the Church's teaching, for Catholic theology, for any Christian point of view. Not just the negative prohibition here, thou shalt not commit adultery, which is what the Sixth Commandment says and prohibits, but also to understand the virtue that's at stake. And in this case, the virtue of chastity. Many years ago, C.S. Lewis made the point that the Sixth Commandment is not the most difficult of commandments, but it does just happen to be the most unpopular. And because we live in a society that doesn't really appreciate the values that are at stake here, I think it's important to review carefully the biblical introduction that the Holy Father presents. And he goes back, as he almost always does, at least when it's appropriate, to the book of Genesis to look for some biblical foundations there about the meaning of the human person and the meaning of human sexuality. And we can see there in the creation accounts, in both creation accounts, that God did in fact create, that's how it begins, male and female, he created them. Equal as persons, but different kinds of persons, a male kind of person, a female kind of person. And there are two citations, there are two verses that will really be our guidelines for the understanding of human sexuality, and therefore for its correct use, and also for its abuse. One of them points out the unitive dimension of human sexuality. It says in Genesis 2:24, for this reason, a man leaves his mother and father, cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh. That two in one flesh is the unitive, personal, exclusive dimension of human sexuality by God's design. It says that was the reason God made it that way. That's not only an Old Testament teaching. We can see in the New Testament once when people ask Jesus kind of a trick question about divorce, it says in Mark 10:11, some teachers came up to him one day and they said, teacher, tell us, is it legitimate for a man to divorce his wife for any reason whatsoever? Now that was actually a trick question, because all his listeners knew that Moses permitted divorce. It's back there in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 24, first four verses. Any teacher, any rabbi who opposed the authority of Moses, your career ended that day. I mean, you were unemployed. And if you understand rabbinic argumentation, if you ask a good rabbi a question, normally he never answers your question. He asks you a question. So go back to Mark 10. Teacher, tell us, is it legitimate for a man to divorce his wife for any reason whatsoever? And Jesus says, how was it in the beginning? Notice, he answers the question by asking a question. Then he continues, in the beginning, God made them male and female, and for this reason, a man leaves his mother and father, cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Moses made that exception for you out of the hardness of your hearts, but that was not God's design in the beginning. So here we have the Son of God telling us what God the Father meant and created in the beginning. That two-in-one flesh, that personal, unitive dimension of human sexuality. The next citation, in 23:31, is that injunction that is addressed to our first parents, that they should increase and multiply, in Genesis 1:27, 1:28. It's repeated in Genesis 9:1 and 9:7 after the flood. And that, of course, is the other dimension, the life dimension of human sexuality. So there's a personal unitive dimension, and there's also a life dimension, which is also a personal dimension. And actually, that too is reflected if you read carefully the prologue of St. John, when it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." If you go down three verses, it says, "Apart from him, nothing came to be." Apart from him, nothing came to be. That provokes the question, why did God create anything? Did he have to? No. Was he necessitated? No. But at some point in time, we call that creation, God generously decided not to be self-enclosed and not to be self-contained. And out of that generous decision of Almighty God came every blessed thing that exists, including you and me. So it's true to say that all love has something to do with real life, and all real life has something to do with real love. It's going to be a constant theme of John Paul II, this generous decision not to be self-contained and not to be self-enclosed. But these two parameters, these two principles are the taproot and the basic principle, I think, for understanding the truth about the human person, but also especially the truth about human sexuality. The technical terms in theology are procreative and unitive, but I find most Americans don't talk that way. But I think most people will have some idea what we're talking about when we say love and life. Love is the personal unitive dimension. Life is the procreative dimension, if you will. And this covenant of love and life is by God's design. And that's what the Holy that's what the Catechism does, and so does the Holy Father in Familiaris Consortio. And in a wonderful little letter called A Letter to Families that he wrote in February of 1994, which we will come back to, because I think the key to everything is there in paragraph 11 of that letter. But we see on the basic understanding, it's a God-given understanding. It's a God-given design of love and life. So we're not talking about some blind fallout from mindless evolution or just that atoms fell a certain way in a certain random place. This is God's plan, both for love and for life, and they are inextricably connected with each other by God's own design. Now, it's in that context that then in 23:37, it speaks about the vocation to chastity. And here, too, to understand the Sixth Commandment, we have to understand, now I'm sure this is obvious, but sometimes we have to state the obvious. Chastity is a Christian virtue. Chastity is a Christian virtue. All Christians are called to be chaste. Chastity is not a synonym for celibacy. Celibacy is a special choice or vow or promise that some people take for the sake of the kingdom, and it's publicly given and publicly received by the church. But that's a special vocation. That's a vocation to love as well, but in a special, special way. Whereas everybody is called to be chaste. So chaste single people, chaste married people, chaste celibate people, and chaste widows. Everyone is called to be chaste. I think sometimes our society equates chastity with celibacy, and it's as if only the celibates are supposed to be chaste, and that it's not clear for everyone else. And that's not true. Everyone has a vocation to chastity. What do we mean by chastity? Chastity is basically the successful integration of sexuality within the person. That's the definition in 23:37 of the Catechism here. The successful integration of human sexuality within the person, both his bodily and spiritual dimension. Now, what do we mean by that? We mean that everybody, whatever their personal vocation, to be married, to be parents, to be celibates, to be single. Whatever someone's vocation is, they have to integrate their sexuality into that personal vocation. And they should try to integrate it. They must more than try. They have to try to accomplish this within a conscious and a loving integration of both sexual desires and affections. Because sexual desires and affections, they don't disappear because people make formal promises. They are not limited merely to one particular vocation. But we try to integrate that into our personal vocation so that we can love well. And love in ways that fully respects the goods of human existence, that good of love and good of life, in the irreplaceable persons in whom these are meant to flourish. It's very important, because if these goods are part of being a human being, and they are, they really are, because we are not angels. Angels have no bodies. Ergo, angels can't get married. Angels are pure spirits. On the other hand, we are not pure material either. We are a body-soul composite. And since we are both material and spiritual as a composite, as a completion, as a togetherness, we never want to separate these goods from the person in which they are. Because I think we'll see with every abuse of the sixth commandment, there is a tendency to separate, say, a sexual good from the person in whom that good adheres, of whom that is a part. And that's one of the basic problems. When we separate persons from goods, we end up tending to use a person, to manipulate a person. For instance, if we were to forget or prescind from the real circumstances, if we pretend we're married when we're not married, or we pretend we are not married when we are married, if we pretend and prescind and put aside the real circumstances of someone's life, well, then someone is either using someone else for a different agenda or perhaps being used by them, and no one really wants to be used. So that's why when we say, as the Catechism defines chastity, as the successful integration of sexuality within the person and within their personal vocation, whatever that vocation is, married, celibate, single, widow, what have you. All right, and everyone is called to be chaste. Because there are going to be some aspects of the sixth commandment and human sexuality where, at least in our society, some people are getting very vocal that they have a special agenda of their own and that chastity doesn't apply to them. It's not true. All Christians are called to be chaste. Everyone has to make the personal effort. And that's what begins then in 2338. Now again, all of the numbers are the paragraph numbers that we find in the Catechism. Here it talks about the integrity of the human person, and it uses those two little points I began with, love and life, to integrate and make them integral. And this applies, and this requires a certain amount of practice. After all, isn't that what a virtue is? It is a practiced perfection. Just as in the natural order, people practice their golf swing, or they practice their tennis swing, or they practice at numbers if they are an accountant. And after you practice something and you do it well, you develop a certain facility, a certain ease. We say something becomes kind of second nature to you. Whenever you do the right thing for the right reasons, that improves and deepens your character. That's really what we mean by virtue. And we have to practice this virtue. It would be the height of silliness to say that, well, no one practices chastity, and then once I get married, everything will be different. If someone didn't practice that virtue before their marriage, they're going to find great difficulty living that virtue within their marriage. Grace, we say, builds on nature. So there has to be this training, there has to be this apprenticeship, if you will. And that apprenticeship is in what the Catechism calls self-mastery, kind of control of ourselves. Why so? If you read a lot of the literature on marriage and Cana and pre-Cana, you'll find a nice expression in it, because it often speaks of making a complete gift of self to one's spouse, a complete gift. But let's think that through. You can only make a gift if you are already in possession of that gift. if we don't have the self-possession, if we don't have the self-mastery, in a sense, we're kind of out of control. It's a principle in philosophy, nemo dat quod non habet. No one gives what he ain't got. You have to have something and have a certain amount of self-possessiveness, not arrogance, but self-possession. And then we can really make a gift. And then those words mean something when we talk about a total gift of self. And that's the apprenticeship in the virtue of chastity, which we encourage in the youngest children, in teenagers, in adults, and in everyone else, so that they really are in a position to make a genuine gift of themselves. This is why in classical moral theology, chastity is put under the virtue of temperance. Temperance does not mean simply abstaining from drink, but temperance is the ability and the practiced perfection of using things in goods in the right amount, but within the state of life in which we have. This is a long work, but it's a serious work, and it's a personal work because it involves that gift of self. We grow morally through our choices. Now, again, we haven't hit any specifics yet, but it's crucial to, the Holy Father calls this his Christian anthropology, if you will, the understanding of the human person, because we have to understand the truth about the human person if we're going to understand the truth about human sexuality. And then in 2346, it comes to what the Catechism calls the integrality of the gift of self. We keep coming back to this term, gift of self. Now, this is actually, I think, one of the hallmarks of Pope John Paul II. In fact, there's a passage from the Second Vatican Council, Gaudium et Spes, number 24, which is the sentence from the Council he quotes more than any other. Often you hear associated with the Pope a school of thought that's sometimes called Christian personalism. And it's true, he's an advocate and really a philosopher of Christian personalism, which may be so much at odds with our secular notion of individualism that often that's why we have such disagreements about the correct use of human sexuality. When the Holy Father was a bishop and a professor in Krakow, he wrote a book called The Acting Person, which is a very difficult book, I find, to understand. In fact, I think the book is opaque. In fact, I don't think it matters what page you open to, because it's very difficult to read. But one page of it, 179, the only page I really understand, he makes a statement that a person fully realizes himself most adequately in the fulfillment of his obligations. Person realizes himself most adequately in the fulfillment of his or her obligations. Therefore, when we freely say yes to certain things, when we say yes to the fulfillment of worthwhile goals and worthwhile goods, and we respect those goods, the good of love, the good of life, in the person in whom these are really part of, not add-ons, but part of, when we respect that, that's really how we fulfill ourselves. And where does that come from? It comes from that single sentence in Gaudium et Spes, where it says that it is only through a sincere gift of yourself that one can find himself. It's only through a sincere gift of self that you can find or fulfill yourself. The citation in the Council is Luke 17:33, that you have to lose your life to find it, and that you'll find your life by giving it. Many times we read those paradoxes in the New Testament. We kind of scratch our head. The first be last, the last first. If you want to become great, you better become little. Find your life, lose it. I came not to be served, but to serve. So it's really not a little beast pit of Polish philosophy. It's not just the teaching of the Council. It's really the teaching of the Gospel, because it's really the life of Jesus. Did he not make a sincere gift of himself? Gift of himself. And truly, this is true of the gift of human sexuality. It's only through a sincere gift of ourselves that we will find and fulfill ourselves. If the book, The Acting Person, is difficult to read, the Pope wrote still another book called Love and Responsibility, which is much, much easier to read, and it's just on this subject of human sexuality, on which, personally, I think, philosophically and theologically, he himself is an expert. But, if you will, that lovely little letter that he wrote during the Year of the Family in 1994, and it's just entitled The Letter to Families. If you use that as the companion to this introduction to the Sixth Commandment, particularly paragraph 11 of that letter, because it's the same thing. It's this business on only through a sincere gift of yourself. By circumstance, it happened that the apostolic delegate asked me to write a little commentary on paragraph 12 of that letter. And it was published in the Observatore Romano. I did not know at the time that whatever's published in the Observatore Romano ends up in Italian and has to go to the Secretary of State's office. And I wrote in my little essay, just on the one paragraph, that Gaudium et Spes 24 is the citation the Holy Father quotes most from the Second Vatican Council. And I got a letter after it was published from the Secretary of State saying, the Pope said, tell the priest he has it right. Remember, the Pope is one of the few bishops left who was an active participant in all the sessions of the council. And this is a key to understanding, because it's so different from the secular notion of individualism, looking out for number one, or I gotta be me, or the reason for marriage, the reason for sex is merely only my own personal satisfaction, psychic or sexual. No, it's only through a gift of self that we'll find ourselves. And that integrality is that which we approach all the various kinds of chastity. It's only through a sincere, because if someone does not come out of themselves, make a gift of themselves, that kind of love is not worthy of the name love. The only kind of love that's worthy of it is when it makes a sincere gift of itself, and that in fact is how you find yourself and fulfill yourself. That's what we see in the life of Jesus. So in 2348, it starts then with the various forms of chastity, reminding us again, everyone is called to be chaste. And then it brings up some of the offenses against it. In 2351, it speaks of lust, which is a disordered desire for the inordinate enjoyment of sexual pleasure, which separates the love-life link we spoke of in the beginning, or even puts them aside. The first example is 2352, and the example is that of masturbation. If we think it through and we say the purposes of human sexuality are two, namely love and life, in a sense, of course, masturbation doesn't accomplish either of those. It's not a personal two-in-one flesh union, and it's got nothing to do with the possibility of the transmission of human life as well. It is, as the Church says and has always taught, it's a gravely disordered act, and it's one that's basically solipsistic, where someone closes in on themselves. It's the direct opposite of a sincere gift of self, probably the first refuge of the isolated and the last refuge of the lonely. The Catechism points out morality or imputability is to be judged there with attention to subjective factors that are mitigating, but it shouldn't be brushed off as if it's a non-event. Because it's not the practice of chastity, and it's not the good preparation for a chaste life, whether it's a married or a single life. 2353 uses the word fornication. Fornication is the biblical term. Now, you'll see how the Catechism outlines things. First, it'll be outside the covenant of marriage. The second half of the chapter that we'll look at next will be inside the covenant of marriage. But fornication is gravely contrary, it says, to the dignity of human persons and human sexuality and the good of spouses and the possible good of children. Our society doesn't use the word fornication so much. We tend to say living together, or some people call it being shacked up. But again, the type of commitment that's necessary, like a total commitment of self, not just for a day, not for a night, not for a weekend, but for life, a lifetime of love and life. That radical commitment is missing there, so we call it kind of premarital sex. Someone's trying to accomplish perhaps one of the goods of human sexuality, satisfaction, but without the covenant that makes it real. And therefore, the Pope says this is really kind of living a lie. They're going through marital actions, but they're not in a marital state, so you're really going through kind of a marital lie. 2354 addresses pornography. And about this, we have to be honest and we have to kind of be brutal. This is not a third world problem. This is a first world problem, and this is a rich man's game. Poor people don't spend $49 for XXX videos. This is a multi-billion dollar industry in the United States. In no way could such impersonal pictures convey the rich plan that God had for love and for life. So anyway, we can either tone this down, put it aside, hopefully wipe it out. I don't think we can wipe it out, but let's not confuse ourselves. This has nothing to do with chaste living and chaste standards. And whatever it contributes to our society, it contributes negatively, as does the next, which is the commercialization of sex. 2355 speaks of prostitution. I don't think anyone has to explain that that's really against a Christian standard, that anyone would be driven by circumstances of whatever nature, that they would end up selling their own bodies. Clearly, this does not honor God's design, both for love and life, in the covenant that is of his design. Lastly, still another social and, in this case, violent exception, contrary to the commandment, forcible rape. Again, chastity is the virtue. We are all called to be chaste. Everyone is called out of love to love, but to love in their own state in life.
Join us again next time for Catholic Morality and the Catechism on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.